This show is sponsored by Dunkin' Cold K Cups. Dunkin' Cold K Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. It's convenient and tasty. You brew over ice, straight out of the Keurig coffee maker. You just brew over ice and you sip them in seconds. You're going to love these Dunkin' Cold K Cups. Enjoy the bold, smooth Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find Dunkin' Cold Coffee in the roasted coffee aisle. When you hear that Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, you're probably thinking, what's the catch? Well, there isn't one. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans for just $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Our producer, Sean, is a big Mint Mobile guy. Here's what he had to say.
For a fraction of the cost, Mint Mobile proved to have excellent coverage with no drop calls or unsent texts. Plus, they make it super easy for me to activate my device just by following a few simple steps online. And bam, done. It was great.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/literally. That's mintmobile.com/literally and cut your wireless bills to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/literally. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Ralphie!
My man, how are you, you youngster?
Hey everybody, it's Literally with me, Rob Lowe. Okay. Man, anytime I get a greaser on the show, man, stay gold. Stay gold! I mean, my man Ralph Macchio, I put stay gold up there as one of the great quotes. And having Ralphie, and I think I'm one of the only people who can call him Ralphie at this point, and to talk about Outsiders and Cobra Kai, the guy's still got it going on, man. He's got a new book coming out. But most of all, you know when you meet your friends from high school and go, do you remember the time when we... That's what we're about to get down with. All right, let's bring him on out. I was thinking about, there are certain songs that come on and I think, oh, this is the Outsiders playlist. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this is what we listen to on Matt's boombox in the pouring rain, right, shooting the rumble. It was, okay, so obviously Bruce, right?
Right.
Obviously.
There was a lot of Clash. Wasn't Dylan into the Clash at the time?
A lot of Clash. And then Tommy was into Adam Ant.
That's right.
Do you remember Adam Ant?
I do. Don't ask me to sing any Adam Ant. But I do remember.
What is it? I can't do it. But he was, Adam Ant was pretty great.
No, I remember at the time. I remember Dylan was always playing the Clash. I had Springsteen on the box all the time in my room, and hotel security would be like, could you turn that down? You know, Darkness was probably the one that was rolling a lot at that point.
It's funny the memories you have. We played a lot of Caps. Remember Caps?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which, by the way, now they kid the kids. It's beer pong.
Yeah, it is beer pong.
It's beer pong, but in our era, it was Caps.
Right.
And I can remember vividly, it might have been, I don't know who was against, might have been you, you know, the last notes of Jung, down in jungle, and I threw the fucking cap up and
it was like,
yeah, ding. Right? I remember it like it was yesterday.
Ah, well, it's, you know, that's where it all began for so many of us, you know, it was... That movie was the one everyone wanted to be in, so we all wanted a piece of that. I read it when I was, I was 12, so it was, it's kindred spirits, man. It just, anytime I see you or Tommy, Dylan, or Diane, or whatever, it's just, it's like freshman year of everything.
That's what I say. People say, what's, you know, do you ever see this one or that one? I'm like, it's like when we see each other, if you were in a fraternity or a sorority and you see your brother or sister, that's what it is.
Yeah.
That's exactly like you go right back to those days. I mean, dude, we were so young. I remember being thrilled that I could order room service for right. like without my parents
right.
yelling at me.
Right. So how old are you then? How old were you? You 17? How old were you?
I was 17.
Right. I was one of the elders. You and Swayze. Yeah,
Swayze
had me by a bit, but yeah, and but so it was my second movie. Yeah, the second movie, but I did a TV series. I was on this TV show called Eight is Enough.
Do you know my connection to that?
Yes, I read it in your book. And I said, I didn't know this. So you think you know a guy.
So Eight is Enough was a big hit. I had done a bomb for ABC, but they were nice enough to give me a holding contract or whatever. And they were going to add this amazing character to Eight is Enough. And I got to go and read. I worked my way through the audition process to get to the network reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember sitting in these giant chairs at Century City. I think the network had big chairs to make you feel insignificant.
Yeah.
And I look over and there you are. Of course, we didn't know each other then, but you're over there. And I think it was just between me and you.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get it. And you did. And I was like, God darn it.
I learned that when I read your book. I didn't know all of that. I learned that. And I'm just, it's interesting because as you write and your memory, you know, it's not so much selective memory, but it's the stuff that it solidifies in your mind over time. Yeah. And how that feels and how you felt. And then you write to that. So, you know, it'd be interesting to have that visual playback of what really played out on the day versus what you feel and take with you. But as long as it's honest, that's I think that, you know, that's what I always reach for.
And the other thing is, you know, with a little bit of never let the facts get in the way of a good story.
Oh, for 100%.
like, you know, like I'm not sure that Martin Sheen, when he would patrol the neighborhood during Halloween to keep the punks in check, I'm not sure he was actually in his Apocalypse Now clothes.
Right, but you had it painted that way.
In my memory of it, he was. But for sure he was, but for sure he was patrolling the neighborhood with a baseball bat. That I'm not making up stories.
I remember you telling that story. You said, Emilio, get the ball bat.
Get the ball bat!
I remember you saying that. I remember hearing that story from you in the lobby of the Tulsa Excelsior, which is now like a DoubleTree.
I went and looked for it. I was in Tulsa.
I did too. I went up to the sixth floor. I did. I walked, and my room was being serviced.
No.
I swear to God, it was like Cruz, me, where you were, Tommy, Dylan down the end of the hall. It was a trip. It was a trip.
Can you imagine a floor of a hotel? let's walk everybody. Like you kind of did it, but let's just marinate.
Yeah, let's let it sit and simmer.
Okay, so I had an adjoining room with Tommy Howell.
Right, because I had Cruz next to me. Dylan was further down the hallway.
Yeah.
And
Emilio.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't remember vividly. I remember Cruz next to me and Dylan down the hallway. Two reasons. One, I just do. But two, with Dylan, we'd go run lines sometimes. I'd come like, he'd say, hey, you want to run these lines in this scene? And I would, you know, go down to his room and we'd run some of the lines, you know, the barbecue sandwich scene from The Outsiders. And then with Cruz, he was just right next door. And I remember the script for Risky Business coming and him saying, I'm getting a script if they, you know, put it in my room if it comes up here. I just remember the script. It didn't say Risky Business on it. It just said, you know, it was just an envelope. So I, you know, I thought of what if I took that script and just, you know, that trajectory.
I remember envelopes arriving for Leif, and there weren't scripts.
Yes, they weren't scripts. They were kind of padded and puffy and soft.
Do you remember? I remember thinking the coolest thing in the world that Leif had figured out a way to get to FedEx his blow to us, and it was like, but you were a good boy. You were a good Long Island boy.
I was ridiculously good.
You were very, very. You didn't fall down the. But we would like, you know, imbibe with Leif and then walk to the river. That was our big night.
I do remember you saying, I put this in the book. I do remember you saying to me that we should get me a t-shirt that says "Do Not Disturb" on it.
That's right.
Back because I'd always have that on my door, and blasting Springsteen or studying my lines. I was at that point. I was like, I was so taking everything so seriously. I mean, I did have fun. I got out. You know, we had good times.
No, you
we
did,
had our
for
chase
sure.
parties and all that stuff. But I was. Pretty reserved and sort of arm's length from diving to the other side of the tracks.
Yeah, because there was the other side of the tracks was ironically Tommy Howell.
Right, at 15.
He's 15. That guy cut a swath through Tulsa, Oklahoma like
a tornado.
And you know, the other thing that was amazing is the business of, I don't need to tell you, that has changed so much, mm-hmm. obviously. This is a Warner Brothers studio movie by one of the most iconic directors of all time. Everybody in the world knows about it, on everybody's radar. And as a 15-year-old, they would provide you with alcohol
yep.
at rap every night.
At times, they are changing.
Do you remember, by the way, when you said you ran lines with Matt Dillon, I'm stunned because I feel my memory of Matt is all he did was ad lib or try to.
Yeah, well, yes, but we this is this one scene, and he's mentioned this a few times, so that's the only reason I would dive into it a little bit. But that scene we shot, he had all the dialogue there.
Is this the one where he's talking about getting the train to Windricksville and everything
no,
else?
No, after that. This is when Sophia comes up, Sophia Coppola is a little 10-year-old in the drive-in, eating the barbecue
yeah.
sandwiches, we, you know, and
yes.
he's saying...
That was a big audition scene for
right,
people.
Right, yeah, I get you a hideout, a hangout, a hideout, you know, is that...
Hideout, you hideout and a
right,
hangout.
That, so that's where the ad-lib came from, and then, so we only shot, it might have gotten dark, I don't remember exactly, but we had to go back and finish up the scene. So at that point, I don't know if I asked or if he asked, but because he always would say, "You're the most professional actor I've ever worked with. I'm just because you want to run lines." I thought that was the deal, you know. I thought you had to learn the lines. So it was a little bit of a bonding moment for us. Well, Johnny and Dallas, it just you know,
you guys are iconic. I mean, I can't think of a more iconic pairing.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, it was great to experience all that stuff. But that's one of those memories, like I alluded to earlier, that sticks. You know, there are many others that just blur.
But the other thing it blows my mind looking back on it. And I guess it's because it was my first movie. I was super excited. We were all friends. It was a good time everywhere, and. But I remember being on the set during scenes I wasn't even in.
Like, yeah,
I
me too.
I schlepped out to the church sequence, which is way outside. I mean, I was at the scene. I have a picture from the day of the barbecue where you guys are getting the sandwich on the mm-hmm. car, where I brought my dad there. Like,
oh, well, yeah.
We would just show up on the set even when we weren't working.
Yeah, it was camp. It was camp. I mean, that was part of it. And a lot that I learned about the camera and about, I mean, Steve Burum, our cinematographer, mm-hmm. was so open and in offering insights and his expertise that I was, you know, I was that little kid just saying, how come you're using that lens? And what's this for? And why would you start back here and push there? And I learned an awful lot on The Outsiders because it was so ensemble. I had that meaty section where up at the church and all that stuff with Ponyboy and Johnny, but there was plenty of the ensemble, the Curtis brothers, the Rumble stuff that I wasn't in, that I would, you know, do exactly as you just said, you know, just come to set. And I learned an awful lot from, you know, that was a little early film school with some of the best.
I forgot. Of course, you're not in the Rumble because you're in the hospital,
right.
Your character. But you missed one of the great harrowing.
Yes.
I mean, it's so we go to do the Rumble. It's going to be a three night shoots. And the first night we're about to shoot and it starts to rain.
Mm-hmm.
And Francis doesn't, and by the way, it's going to rain and be done in like 2 hours.
Right.
Francis doesn't want to wait.
Mm-hmm.
So we shoot with the rain, which means now for the next three nights where there is no rain,
we're creating it.
We have to create rain. Mm-hmm. And it's among the most miserable things I've ever shot to this day.
I could imagine. I was spared that one. It was it's funny when you're young, some actors are still this way, but you have that moment, right? The Rumble, everyone was trying to find their moment. I didn't have that opportunity with the role I had, but I see that even in the show that I'm on now, Cobra Kai. These, everyone, when there's a fight and it's about making the most of that spinning heel kick or that takedown or that whatever, especially with the young cast. And I see when there's so many times I'm watching scenes on Cobra Kai, when the kids are fighting or whatever, and I'm thinking of that time on the outside because everyone just talked about,
All we talked about.
What they were gonna do. Dialogue took a back seat to the fight scenes.
I think it's why I relish and seem to have good luck, like you do as well, when in an ensemble, because it was the first thing we did in that kind of super healthy but really intense competition. And listen, between Swayze and Cruz, I mean, look, at this point, Tom's competitive, focus is literally legendary,
right?
And he had it even I mean, today he's hanging off of, jumping off 2,000-foot cliffs, but in our day it was just doing a backflip.
Right.
Like
Yes.
I wasn't doing the backflip. Fuck that.
Yep. No, he was that way always. I mean, when he pulled his cap
Pull the
off to
tooth
have
out.
the to pull his tooth out to, he's driven from the earliest days, and you said it's kind of paid dividends, and then it's part of what he's done and what he is. Really amazing to be there at the origin of that.
Total, the Tom Cruise origin story. Steve Randall.
Randall.
Now, when you auditioned in New York, because the other thing, there were the LA crew, and
I
then
did not
we went.
audition in New York. This is an
Oh.
interesting thing. People just assume, since I was from New York, that I auditioned in New York like Matt Dillon and such. I auditioned at Zoetrope Studios on Las Palmas, right?
Yes.
2 days in that, the famous slash infamous ensemble auditions, where you're watching each other and trying to gauge.
I'm most curious, who do you remember being there?
I remember Dennis Quaid,
Yep, me
Helen
too.
Slater,
Yep.
Kate Capshaw, Scott Baio. I remember Scott Baio coming in a, it was because he was probably one of the more famous people walking in the room.
Yes.
Who else do I remember? Mickey. Oh, I'm Mickey Rourke. I read with Mickey a few times.
I remember Mickey. Listen again, whether it was actually true or not, my truth is he was on roller skates and he stank. That's my memory.
Okay.
The guy was literally on roller skates. And I remember Francis and everybody treating him like Jesus when he
Right.
walked in.
Well, they were big
It
fans.
was like the Red Sea parted.
Yeah, what was the movie that when he was?
Oh, it was Body Heat. He was the
Yes, Body Heat. Right.
yeah.
His
He
role
had
in
had that
Body Heat.
great character part in Body Heat,
Yeah.
but hadn't really, taken off. And of course, he was in Rumblefish. Did they ask you to be in Rumblefish?
At one point, good question. At one point, I spoke to Fred Roos. For those of you who don't know, Francis Coppola's longtime producer and casting
Genius,
guru.
casting
Yeah,
genius.
he is a casting genius because he loved us and gave us great parts.
That's right. Well, that's the only reason.
So he came to me and discussed the role that Vincent Spano played,
I bet, yeah.
and we spoke about that, and I didn't read for it, but we had discussions. But then the ship kind of sailed in a different direction.
Yeah. It's funny, my perception up until recently is that Outsiders was the sort of public hit, but the cool one to be in was Rumblefish.
Right.
Didn't it feel that way?
Stuart Copeland, the black and white, it kind of did feel
Mickey Hart from The Grateful
right,
Dead,
just
who's
hanging
like there.
around. Tom Waits. Well, Tom Waits was in our movie too, but it was cool having those guys around. It was
Wasn't it?
really cool to just like hang out and talk to Tom Waits and
I remember when I went to the first Zoetrope Francis's in New York, I vividly remember Carly Simon in a cat suit.
Wow.
Don't know what she was doing. And I was like, man, there's a lot of cool shit going on in Francis Coppola world.
Exactly. You know, it's interesting because I auditioned, like I said, those few days in L.A., and then it was radio silence for more than a couple of weeks.
Really?
And then I heard that some of the guys were flown to New York. Now, were you flown to New York for that session?
Yeah, see, this is the thing. I was not. What?
I don't know if they were still looking. And Francis, I've asked him point blank, even recently, like a couple of years ago in Napa, we did a talk back to a bunch of grade school kids and about The Outsiders. And he said, because I know when they did the workshop, I know Downey Jr. played Johnny Cade in the workshop, but I think this was before Francis was directing, when it was first up. So I always wondered if that's the guy they wanted, but it just didn't happen. And I was the default, but I was in his mind, in his words, I was the Johnny. So they closed the book on that. I said, you could have called me right away.
That's not his way.
No. So it was, whatever, it worked out. I mean, that's the movie that holds such a special place for me.
I love Francis, but bedside manner with actors is not his strong suit.
Right. Right.
Yeah, the trip to New York, it was my first time I went to, it's me, Tom Cruise, Emilio, Tommy Howell, Darren Dalton, first time we ever flew first class. It was great. It stayed at the Plaza, I'll never forget that, and I also remember Tom getting on the phone to his, I wrote about it in my book, getting on the phone to his agent, Paula Wagner, going, they had me sharing a room.
I know, right on it.
Right on it. Where else can you go surfing and skiing in the same day? Or check out a world-class art museum and camp out under a brilliant night sky same day? Or hike through the redwoods and get a luxury spa treatment? There's only one answer: California. No matter where you go across this state, you will find a way to play. I love California. And I have not yet surfed and skied in the same day, although I do both. So that is on my bucket list. It's the most beautiful place in the world. Discover why California is the ultimate playground. Head to visitcalifornia.com to start planning your trip today.
Thanks to Quince, I can get high-end, versatile pieces at fantastic prices. They've got killer luxury essentials that are perfect for my wardrobe. Quince has all the must-haves, like Mongolian cashmere crewneck sweaters from $50, iconic 100% leather jackets, and versatile flow-knit activewear. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of middlemen and passes that savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. One of my producers tried Quince, and here's what he had to say.
I'm really excited to revamp my closet with Quince. There are so many great options at pretty unbeatable prices. I'm really excited to try out the burgundy cashmere crewneck. I love the blue chore jacket. Maybe I'll throw some joggers in there. These are great options at pretty unbeatable prices.
Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/rob for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince, quince.com/rob to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rob. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. I know that for me, people are out, people are about, people want to do stuff, and we want to do it, but it can be a grind. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient,
flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapist at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Rob Lowe today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Rob Lowe. I remember seeing Karate Kid. I was making... Isn't it funny that we all... It's like in the 80s, you had to do a sports movie.
Yeah.
Didn't you? You had to.
Vision Quest.
Vision Quest.
Just pull a random one out.
My favorite thing about Vision Quest is the Appalachian bar where Madonna is singing.
Yep.
She's in the bar. You know, see, it's what happens in salt rust belt towns.
Just talent placement.
Vision Quest. But you, Karate Kid's the granddaddy of, there's nothing that comes close. My little young blood is a speck in the celestial body that where you are a supernova, I would say, sir.
Well, being a hockey fan, as I am.
I know, that's right.
The Karate Kid has, stood beyond the test of time now, And it's, you got to credit, it comes from, if it's not on the page, ain't on the stage. I mean, Robert Mark Kamen just wrote a script that just caught fire at the right time, and the casting was just... dead on the time. There's so many of those elements that go into I remember going up, I ran into Diane Lane when we were going up to look at The Outsiders and do the talk through of the anniversary cut, like the full version. Yeah. That had all your scenes back in and such. She said, she was just nominated, and I said, congratulations. She said, listen, honey, if I knew how to make a hit, I'd do more of them. She said almost like a Lauren Bacall delivery,
I expected the tag amazing.
On the cigarette and the smoke after, but that's so there's so many elements going back to what I was saying about the Karate Kid and all those elements that came together, the director John Avildsen, the great Jerry Weintraub, the old school producer, he was great, all those pieces, and then Pat Morita in the role of a lifetime. I mean, that's the secret sauce, And then what happened with all the little, when you talk about the different, you mentioned Youngblood and the Karate Kid, sports movie, overcoming obstacles, winning in the end, rooting for that underdog, the protagonist, the hurdles, the payoffs, the setups, the payoff, all that stuff. With the Karate Kid, the afterlife of even the original theatrical distribution became pop culture. And then the internet, it becomes theorized as, okay, wait a second, was it really a legal kick? And maybe that was the good guy. And now you have, get him a body bag is all of a sudden, a line that you could yell out at a sports game and everybody cheers. Yep. And that's just some otherworldly magic strike that why it all came together.
And also... It was, you always had to have that great song, and that Peter Cetera. It wasn't Chicago.
Well, Peter Cetera was the sequel, the Glory of Love. That was for part two.
Oh, you're kidding. That was in my mind, that's in the original.
Yeah. I mean, that was the sort of love theme for part two that took place in Japan, Okinawa, and the love story. But the original was You're the Best Around, which is the, arguably the ultimate 80s montage theme. And I write about that stuff as well, like how the music montage. It was the era of that.
The music montage. I mean, what would you do without it?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no greater moment in movie montage history than you with the paintbrush,
right?
Or the waxing on. No. That's it. I mean, that's. I mean, you just kind of go, yeah. That's the in memoriam clip for sure.
Dude, I love that you mentioned that, because every Oscars. Probably sans this last one. That's the conversation I'm always having when I watch that as I'm getting older and older. Yes. Can I put in a submission for what I want?
Yes, you should be able to.
I think you should be able to, right? I think when you hit what age? What age would be the time where you could say these are the clips either I want or this is the freeze frame that I want to go with?
People plan their own funerals.
Yeah, why not?
Why is this any different?
I think so. I think we should spearhead this.
Well, I'm just convinced every time I exit a door and turn around and deliver a line, you know, you walk and then you pause and you turn around and. Mm-hmm. Or God forbid you wave.
Yeah. Oh no, that's
like
not.
If you wave goodbye.
No more waving.
You're like, oh yeah, this could be it.
This could be the one.
This could be the one.
Or you could be omitted. You could be that one that's the next day. How could they ever leave Rob and Ralph out of the?
Yeah. Who are we?
Well, he was a television guy. Well, he actually made it in movies at first. Yeah, but it was a.
Yeah. Believe me, there could be a way to be ignored.
You know, may not be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time. It's just, by the way, your book is great. Let's just get because your book's coming out like almost any day now, isn't it?
Yep, October 18th.
I have a lot of questions. First of all, how are you enjoying being an author?
I'm enjoying it. I think that, you know, for me, it happened. I wrote The Lion's Share during season 4 and 5 of Cobra Kai when we were shooting kind of back-to-back seasons during the pandemic. So I was kind of in a bubble and it was, you know, go on set, you know, testing 3-4 times a week, face masks, the whole thing. And then I would just go back to where I stayed in Atlanta and sit at my computer and order in food because nobody was going anywhere. And it was cathartic. I really, you know, it's a story that only I kind of can tell what it's been to walk in the shoes of this character for close to 40 years now, and the ups and downs of it all, but it's really a celebration of it. You know, I tried to make it equal parts nostalgia and contemporary relevance at the same time, because that's what it is in my life, especially with this show that's kind of blown up now on Netflix. But I enjoyed diving into to all I've gained from it, all I've learned from it, my missteps during it, and being it sort of, you know, and like I said, in the shoes of this Daniel LaRusso that has become a piece of everyone's, well, maybe not everyone's, but many people's childhood, and now they're sharing it with their kids, and that's the cool part. I said this joke on Colbert. He, you know, last time I was on, I just said, it's, you know, he said, what's it like? This thing's number one on Netflix, because it was on that day. And I said, well, it's gone from, you know, it's kind of humbling. It used to be, hey, aren't you the guy from The Karate Kid? And now it's like, hey, don't you play the dad on my favorite show? I said, yeah, that's me. I'm your dad on your favorite show. Or whatever.
That's right.
But so that's kind of a nice thing. But to answer the question, I do enjoy writing. I want to do more of it. Not necessarily in this genre, maybe other areas, because it's an expression. And if you feel you have something to say, you know, and it's unique, just like what you did when you launched on with your best-selling. Your first book, and from there, it's, you know, people want to hear. And if you have a voice and it sounds like you, that was important to me up front. I said I'd rather have a bad sentence that sounds like me than something brilliant that sounds like someone else wrote it. I tried that once. I just kept having to rewrite everything the ghostwriter delivered, and it never worked, and I'm glad it never worked. So this is all me, you know, good, bad, or indifferent.
I've never understood the ghostwriting thing.
Makes no sense to me.
I don't get it, because people know you want it to be you, mm-hmm. right? You want it to be your voice, for sure. I love that you named your son Daniel. Mm-hmm. I love that. That's the greatest. It makes me think I should have named one of my boys Soda Pop.
That's so funny, because that's funny you bring that up. It was a back and forth. My daughter Julia was born, you know, a couple years before Dan. He's Dan now as a 26 year old.
Yes, of course.
But but it was a conversation. You know, my wife's best friend, her cousin growing up, is named Daniel. And they were very, very close. And he has actually since passed prematurely. It was very difficult last year, but not to put a downer on it, but I'm just paying homage to him and the namesake. And so that was always, she always wanted to potentially name her son Daniel. I was like, okay, now this comes with a few things if I name my son Daniel, if I blessed for with a son. So
yes, right.
We had the with Julia, we didn't know if it was going to be a boy or a girl, and I think I convinced Lee, let's not name, you know, Daniel's son. I'd have to deal with this. We'd have to maybe Daniel's son, you know, it was kind of, you know. And but then time had passed, and we it's a beautiful name. It never goes out of style, maybe unlike never. Ralph. So we went for it. And like I wrote this story in the book when, you know, my son was really proud of it, but there was that time, and I forget exactly how I laid out the story in the book, but when he was in a Little League game and he tripped going around third base, and the opposing coach goes, "Down goes LaRusso," because he looked at me like,
amazing.
"Really, Dad? Really? You could have."
Yeah. Oh, for awful. Sure. You're asking
but
for
he's,
it.
But he's proud now, and he's his own person, but it's good. And on your, and on the Rob Lowe roast, if you will, which I participated in.
You are
in,
so funny. You're so funny in the roast.
It was
so funny.
It was a crazy time, man. It was. I am so glad I did it. It was just a, you know, I hadn't done something like that. I'm not a comic, and I had to wait my time, you know. And it was like 2.5. You know, it's waiting for it. I wish I went second, not
right.
Seventh or eighth, because you first of all you're getting hit with shrapnel all night long. You know that going in. So I was ready for it, and that was part of it. I wouldn't have done it if I was not open to that. And self-deprecation is one of my favorite hobbies. So yeah. I was like, okay. But one of my favorite jokes was, I forget who it was. I don't know if it was Spade. I don't know who it was. But he says, Ralph Macchio named your son after his character from his biggest movie. And that's like Rob Lowe naming his kid Nothing. I forget who it was, but it just made me, it was just like, it's a tough room, man.
It's a tough room. That remains one of the, I think it's their biggest roast ever.
Yeah.
And I love it. I highly, you guys can watch it. It's, you can get it on wherever the hell you get.
Yeah.
Stuff.
It's worth it.
It's
worth
so funny.
At least for Rob and my part.
It's really funny. And I take a beating.
No, it was good.
Which is the whole point. And so you have to get the shit pounded out of you,
yeah.
So that when you go up there and just turn the tables, it works. But God, that was such a fun night.
Yeah, it was. You know, it's interesting because for me, you know, it made sense. The head writer I had worked with on a film, so we had kind of talked through what the angle was for me, and I said, let's make it an acting piece. Let me get to some point that I get to stick the landing, even if I slip and fall along the way. And I think at the end of it, I was able to kind of, because it was not just like ripping you a new one constantly. Yeah, it was sort of like, how did you get this? And I didn't. Now, this is literally 8 months before Cobra Kai hit and explodes and has been on for 5 years. But it was like such a kind of interesting timing. Interesting, a tie into to Cobra Kai and the Rob Lowe roast to Comedy Central. How about that for a plug? I was watching it. It was like around Labor Day, right? When they air
yep.
it. And I'm watching it and I notice on my phone that I'm being followed by John Hurwitz, who I recognize the name, who was, you know, who created, co-created Harold and Kumar. And I started saying, why is this guy following me? And literally 3 days later, you know, when you get the check mark and you know it's...
Yep.
3 days later, I get a call from my lawyer say, hey, do you want to meet these guys, Hurwitz and Schlossberg and their friend Josh Heal? They have an idea. And that was Cobra Kai. So I'm like, I was so good on the Rob Lowe roast. I look great. I was funny. I'm going to get a show out of this.
That's amazing. That's really amazing.
But it really had nothing to specifically. It wasn't. I think doing the roast was not a. It didn't create that project by any stretch, but it might have. You know, just 4 or 5 people who make decisions might have just said, you know what, this seems okay.
I tell young actors that you never know what's going to lead to the next thing.
100%.
Hey, listeners. Ever have trouble getting someone on the phone when you have a question about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. Join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak, On 34th, Elemis, and more. Plus, to help bring more parks to more people, Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project, transforming vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help ensure healthy, livable communities for generations to come. Donate online or in store and learn more at macys.com/purpose.
I love fast cars, but there aren't a ton of high-performance EVs. They're certainly out here, there, but when I get a chance to get behind the wheel of one, I love it, and I was blown away by the Kia EV6 GT. When you get behind the wheel of the Kia, it is literally like being in a state-of-the-art rocket ship, but also comfortable. The thing goes from 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. It is the premium driving experience, and of course, it's an EV, so the climate thanks you. SiriusXM provides access to over 165 channels in the vehicle: music, sports, news, comedy, yacht rock. Let's go. Little Steely Dan going in your Kia. Come on now. So check it out today. It is the all-electric Kia EV6 GT. I had a blast checking it out. Believe me, you should do it yourself via kia.com/EV6 to learn more. That is kia.com/EV6. Kia, movement that inspires. Does the name Patton Place mean anything to you?
Yes. And you just jogged my, went down the, what is that?
Did you go down the rabbit hole just now?
Yeah, I was just like, where am I? And all of a sudden I found myself on Riverside by Van Nuys.
So I'm obsessed with Patton Place. I think there's a TV show in it.
There is.
Isn't there? Yeah. So what it is a very 1970s redwood decked, three-story condo with probably 15 condominiums in it, and literally next to the freeway.
It's right next to the freeway.
On Riverside and Van Nuys in the valley, with a sign that says Patton Place, because it was owned by
Dick Van Patten.
It was his big real estate play.
Yep.
And it was kind of a haven for actors. So you lived there for a bit.
I didn't live there. I just had folks that I knew there, so I was there all the time.
I thought you lived there.
I was always that is true because I was by myself. You know, this was during Eight Is Enough, before The Outsiders. I was living in Santa Monica, and then I moved to Marina Del Rey when I was evicted because whoever owned the condo I was in had a divorce, and she got that, and I was down to Marina Del Rey. So I would drive up, you know, the 405 and hang out there and then go to Westwood on Friday nights and see movies. That was kind of it in 1980
and 81, 82.
Ann Gillian. Ann Gillian, yeah.
Who was on, what was her show?
It's a Living.
Yes. Married to a Gnarly Policeman. Remember that?
That is true. Chicago Cop. I forget his name. Yeah.
And all of the various and sundry younger Van Pattens.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Nels, Vince. Vince Van Patten was like playing Wimbledon.
Yeah, no, major tennis. Major.
What's her name? The amazing, who's now Gretzky's wife.
Janet Jones.
Janet Jones, Solid Gold Dancer.
That's right, man. You're good. You are good, sir. Yeah, you're really jogging my memory. That's right.
I pass it every day. It's on the way really? To my studio. It's still there. It still has a room for you.
I'm going to drive by when I'm out. I'm going to be out there next week. Yeah, the end of next week. I'm totally,
oh, you are? You're coming out? Oh, good. Well, let's try to get together.
Yeah, then next week and then the following. So I'll be next.
Are you on the book tour? Are you doing the big book tour now?
That will be going on. That'll be, you know, that's a one day in. You've done that, right? It's like a day on the plane at the theater, on the plane at the theater, on the plane at the theater. So I'm looking forward to the experience, I think.
It's going to be great. You're going to love it. It's going to be great. How much time did you spend on titles? I think titles are super important because I know you're a music fan like me, mm-hmm. and I looked at my book as my album.
Yep.
And like, and the chapters is the songs. Do I want to lead with a hit? Do I want to do like a kind of deep cut? And then, you know, this is kind of a poppy feel good chapter, so maybe I need to do a ballad. Did you look at the book like that, and did you spend time on the titles and all of that? Did you think of it in those terms?
I did. I very much so with the chapters. That's what I came up with first. I mean, at first, my working title on the book was Me, Myself, and LaRusso. That was sort mm-hmm. of my working title because it's, you know, it's that blurred lines of, you know, yeah. people like, hey, so you enjoy growing up in Jersey? I'm like, didn't live in Jersey. But I get it, you know, I'm not from Newark, and I didn't have a nice old Japanese guy teach me how to paint and sand and polish. But it's so Me, Myself, and LaRusso made sense in sort of the initial onset of it. And then I took chapters, I just laid down, I wanted 12 chapters, I don't, you know, for some reason. And I just started coming up with titles of chapters that sort of encompassed, you know, that were hopefully humorous, interesting, you know, wasn't just like getting the part, meeting Miyagi, you know, I wanted it to have, you know, other relevance to it. And so when that was laid out, I stayed true to that, the whole writing process. And then, I mean, I always had Waxing On was always a back pocket, you know, and obviously anyone, not obviously, but certainly, you know, the publishing houses and the lit agents all were like, you have to call this that, you know. So, and the Karate Kid should be on the cover because it's such a global yeah. brand. And so yeah. it was a matter, like you talk about, like that's the album cover and finding. I kept looking for a more obscure, but like had all that, and it never would take. So Waxing On, the Karate Kid and Me, and to wax poetic is to go on about, you know, so I like that sort of subtle double meaning. And then, so that's where we landed. And
that is, it's so obviously the right title. Yeah. It's just not even a conversation.
But I try, you know, you try. I'm like, I don't want to just be this, you know, you could tell how analytical.
Oh, I could see you like totally belaboring.
When
it's so clear.
I know.
There is no title other than this.
You know, I've seen the poster. Listen, and I talk about the title of The Karate Kid, like no hating that title, because I said, you know, I always joke that if I ever get the part, I'd probably have to carry it for the rest of my life in a kind mm-hmm. of funny way. But it's like Weintraub said, it's a terrible title, which makes it a great title.
Ooh, did he say that? That's amazing.
Yeah, he goes, it is a terrible title, but that makes it a great title. I love Jerry. He's great.
Okay, so I have a movie coming out in Netflix, and it's coming out I think around Christmas time. So it's a story of a father and his estranged son, and the only thing they bond over is the family dog, who runs away on the Appalachian Trail, and they have to go together and try to find the dog. Hmm. It's everything you think it is.
Right.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, you know exactly what that movie is. Title of the movie? Dog Gone. Jerry Weintraub title.
Yep.
That title is so bad that
it's
great. Actually great.
Yep. That's it. Home run. This is the last time I saw Jerry. He said we were a group of people, you know, the Hollywood, all his yeah. friends and such. And he was like, you know, he took me by my face and, you know, said it in a very earnest way. He goes, you know, you're a big part of my life and I love you And I forget exactly from those are the words I heard. There's a little more of that, and then he turned to a bunch of people and he goes, "Hey, you meet Ralph? This kid bought me a couple of houses." So that's Jerry being Jerry right there, you know. And then one
Jerry
time,
Weintraub, he's one of the great Hollywood producers. He, I did Behind the Candelabra for him, which is his, I think, his last movie.
Yeah, with Michael Douglas and
He had a at his the biggest estate I'd ever been on at the time, and at the front door, on either side of the front door, he had stained glass portraits, one of his wife and one of him.
Yes.
His wife was a Do you remember this?
Jane.
His wife was a singer, so it's a picture of her with a microphone in a very evocative pose, and then the other side of the drawer is a picture of him with a phone in his hand.
Yeah. He's the last of a breed, man. He is the last of a breed. I have so many Jerry stories. But, and a couple of them are in Waxing On because they deserve it. I mean, he's the one we saw the movie for the first time, and everyone's out on the street doing the crane stance, and he said... Took me by the arm and he goes, "We're gonna be making a couple of these."
Wow.
And so I write to that, what is a couple of these? Who, and then here we are in 2022 and
more than
season five of Cobra Kai. None of us knew that. Pretty amazing.
Yep.
Great stuff.
Are you gonna see Bruce on the new tour?
I think so. I haven't. I'm looking at, I don't know when our production schedule lines up, but
where do you guys are you guys still shooting?
We're
in
Atlanta.
Atlanta.
Yep. It's the only. It's I call it Cobra California, because it's we have no leaves on the trees. You can never have an open window. It's supposed to be the valley, and we have three stock shots, and we shoot maybe 4 hours in L.A. to someone just walking by Ventura Dupars, and we can like we're here, and then we're back in Atlanta.
I hate to break it to you, the Ventura Dupars is gone.
Yeah, oh, right.
Shocking.
Yeah, I used to go there all the time from Patton Place.
From Patton Place. Oh, man. I remember that going to Westwood on Friday nights, that was a thing, right? I'm not imagining that.
No, that was it, man, with the, almost like sideshow circus jugglers and sword swallowers and the college kids from UCLA coming down.
And it was the only place to see movies. It was the only place.
Indiana Jones there, Star 80. I'm trying to think of that time.
Star 80.
I was
oh
like,
my God.
I went to the 10:30 a.m. show of Star 80 with Eric Roberts. I'm like by myself because it's Bob Fosse. I have to, it's like certain filmmakers, I see their movies even when they miss. And
I don't think that missed.
No, it did not. It did not. But I would see. I'll see anything Scorsese does or Francis or, and Bob Fosse, among others, Sidney Lumet, who I also write about because I was such a, his movies were such a big influence on.
Oh, Prince of the City?
Oh, my God. I saw that at the Cinerama Dome.
How about the one that with no, is it Q&A? Bro?
Oh, Q&A. Timothy Hutton,
Ooh.
Right?
That's Timothy Tim? Hutton and
Nick
and,
Nolte.
Nick Nolte.
Wow.
Oof. Star 80. I think, didn't we have... I think we had a lot of bits around Star 80 on The Outsiders. I think we all did our Paul Schneider.
Yeah, right. I'm sure. That's 100%.
We had more stupid bits. It's amazing that we remember them.
Yeah, no, and the Bill Murray Caddyshack. Anytime I went to play miniature golf.
Do you remember going to the Nautilus?
The gym, the Nautilus.
This is my favorite. So by the way... Look, you were not a big workout guy.
No, still am not. I have to work out, but I spend my time in the gym to stay in shape. But
I was never. I since became one, ironically. But then I'd never worked out. Didn't like working out. But Tom and Emilio were my homies, and they were like lunatic working out fiends, and there was this is 1982. Mm-hmm. There are no gyms. That hadn't really happened yet. But there was what was called a Nautilus.
Right.
And that, like people who know will know. There was a Nautilus and we had to take a cab like an hour outside and it was so tiny. And I just remember going, Tom would always want me to go. And so me and Cruz would take a cab to the Nautilus and the music, I just can remember being on the PEC deck helping Tom and, that stupid song, if you like pina coladas, getting caught. That was what they were playing at the Nautilus in Tulsa. But do you know how you just remember that? Talk about a snapshot.
Yep.
Whenever I hear that song.
You're there.
I'm in the Nautilus with Tom. So no, stupid.
I know. Nautilus was, I so distinctly remember, because I think I, when I would be leaving Patton Place, for whatever reason, I would go to some Nautilus in the valley, you know, with all the chains on all the equipment. It was this, you know, it's sort of like Blockbuster Video. Like, this is going to last forever. No, it's not.
Yeah.
Then it's really...
too good. Mm-hmm. Well, God, this has been so fun. Jeez, I mean, I was so glad that we got to do. You and I could go on.
Oh,
and
my God.
On.
No, we'll have a deeper dive 70s cinema conversation when we get together, which is long overdue. This is great. I mean, it's just so fun to have a familiar conversation and tie into something that that is so meaningful and poignant in both of our lives, and here we are still kicking these kids.
I know. It always feels like it's better than a high school reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Better.
You don't have to look at, because we look pretty good. That's why.
Because we've kept our fucking.
We
shit
have
tight.
Preserved pretty well. Yeah,
yes. You are like the guy who you're like an amp frozen in amber.
Yeah. No, it's my parents' fault. They fucked.
Do they
up
have
for
it? Because my dad has it. My dad's a freak of nature.
Yeah, I think so. I got a little lucky, although I like the camera a little bit wider these days.
Well, my heart is all warm and fuzzy. First of all, Ralph looks exactly the same. One of those people who's always been such a decent, sweet, talented, funny, like truly one of the good guys. And I could not be more happy that he's having this success that he's having at this point in his life. I hope you guys had fun. I could have gone on forever talking to him about Outsiders. There was Leif Garrett on one end of the pendulum, and then there was Ralph. And then I was swinging in the middle. All right, y'all. You got questions? I got answers. Let's hit the lowdown line.
Hello, you've reached literally in our lowdown line, where you can get the lowdown on all things about me, Rob Lowe. 323-570-4551. So have at it. Here's the beep.
Hey, Rob. My name's Jaden, and I'm here with my sister Julia, my cousin Natalie, and my mom Heather.
Hi.
We're from Toronto, Ontario, and we just wanted to know, what was your most rebellious teenage moment? That's it. We love your podcast. Bye.
Oh, you guys are so damn cute. Thank you for calling in. But see, I know your mom is there listening, and I feel like if I give you a really rebellious thing, it's going to give you all an excuse to be rebellious, and then your mom's going to be mad not only at you, but at me. And I don't want that. I will have to tell you, honestly, I was a quote-unquote very good boy as a teenager. I was like afraid to ditch class, afraid to cheat on a test. When like kids around me would just run amok, I just couldn't believe like their audacity, and I was like, just couldn't do it. And then I got older, and then I made up for it big time. So I guess what I'm saying is moderation is good. I probably should have been a little more rebellious as a teenager, and then I would have been less rebellious as I was older. But let me ask you, let me see. Let me give you a specific. I would say I once completely made up an art project essay. We were assigned an artist to do a deep dive into their lives, and I completely made up everything about the artist, and the teacher never knew the difference. And I think I got a B, maybe even a B+. Not my finest, but it proved I could write, clearly. I pulled it off. All right. Thanks for calling, you guys. I'll see you next week on Literally. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe, produced by me, Rob Schulte, with help from associate producer Sarah Begar. Our coordinating producer is Lisa Berm. Our research is done by Alyssa Grawl. The podcast is executive produced by Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Adam Sachs, Jeff Ross, and Joanna Solitaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. All of the music you hear is by Devin Bryant. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Literally with Rob Lowe.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.